Every day, we interact with dozens of algorithms as we go about our lives, whether they're planning the best route between destinations, helping us find new music, or curating our social media feeds. Meanwhile, AI tools are learning to generate content in a way that seemed like science fiction a decade ago and is now our reality. But these same tools are raising major questions about the power they might have over our lives. Can we have the good parts of these emerging technologies without just signing up for the negatives? Professor Marek Kowalkiewicz says we can and should think of these tools more as minions than overlords. He's the chair in digital economy at QUT and the author of a book called The Economy of Algorithms, AI and the Rise of the Digital Minions. Professor Kowalkiewicz, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Hilary.
What is an algorithm in this context? Just, you know, the basic definition. What kind of tool are we talking about?
That's right. We're talking about algorithms so much, and not many people know that algorithms have been around for thousands of years, well beyond before computers were invented. An algorithm is simply a set of instructions to be followed. A recipe is an algorithm. It's just that these days, we typically give those instructions to computers and run them on computers. So we typically use this term in reference to a computer program. A set of instructions to follow. That's all that it is.
I know I've heard them referred to as like a recipe, but I also understand from your work that sometimes they get so complicated that even the people working on them can't explain how they arrive at the results that they do. If it's a recipe, how can it get so opaque?
Yes. When I learned to write code when I was a young kid, the typical approach was that software developers would write those instructions themselves. Now, the rise of artificial intelligence has really changed it, mostly because we have a new paradigm, a new way of creating algorithms, and this is called machine learning. And this is an approach in which, rather than us humans deciding what the instructions are, it's the computers themselves seeing what the inputs, you know, what the information they're receiving and what the outputs, what information they should be producing are, they create those sets of instructions themselves. And that gets a bit messy. Those algorithms can be really huge. You might have heard people referring to them as neural networks or deep learning algorithms. These are the ones that are both very impressive, but also practically impossible for most humans to unpack and understand.
Well, yes, and we've been hearing about some of the issues that happen with the databases that are used to feed these algorithms and the bias that's inherent in the source information turning up in the results. Is it a problem then on an even greater scale if the machine is accessing databases that we don't know about?
It's a continuous problem, and it's a problem among people who create or work with computers to create those algorithms, because they often do not understand how much bias is hidden in past data, in databases of actions that we have made in the past. So a recent case of a computer program used in the judicial system in the US that was basically analyzing past data about people convicted for crimes, it pretty much encoded and then amplified the biases of the judges in the past. So if you were a person of color, that algorithm would automatically rank you as one that is at a higher risk of reoffending, which is obviously not what we want and probably not what the creators of this algorithm intended.
Okay, so far this discussion is not filling me with hope and optimism, I have to say. But you argue that we should think of algorithms as a digital minion. What do you mean by that? Especially,
that's right.
I guess, when we think, at the consumer level rather than the corporate level.
Correct. So, look, I am an optimist, but not a hopeless optimist. And this means that I talk about challenges with algorithms because I do believe that if we address those and understand what problems might be caused by, a careless implementation of those algorithms, we could actually reach amazing opportunities with those. I love to talk about algorithms and especially artificial intelligence as digital minions because that's really what they are. There is this rhetoric around us saying that AI is super intelligent and, you know, can do so many magical things. You know, a lot of us in the computer science field, those who understand technology, are much more skeptical. What we're seeing is the equivalent of minions from the movie, you know, those yellow creatures that are full of energy and very happy to help us, which is pretty much, you know, the same about algorithms, though they don't have feelings, so they're not happy, they're just helping us. But you look away for half a day, for 2 days, and disasters might unfold. Now, a lot of us forget about the fact that those algorithms are like digital minions, and we let them do things without supervision. That's when problems start. When you think about algorithms as digital minions, and you constantly oversee them, try to make sure that nothing goes wrong, that's where amazing things can happen.
I love the idea that I've got a tiny little Kevin in my smartphone.
Oh, you do.
To help me. We're speaking with Professor Marek Kowalkiewicz, who's the chair in digital economy at QUT and the author of a book called The Economy of Algorithms, AI and the Rise of the Digital Minions. I love this example that you use, Marek, of self-driving cars to make the point that there are different levels of automation and we need to work out which one we're at so that we don't just stick our feet up in the passenger seat and hope for the best. Is that a metaphor for our use of algorithms generally at the moment?
Yes, 100%. So imagine a car that you might be driving at the moment that might have some features of what we would call automated driving, right? So some of the, you know, electric cars that we drive on our streets can follow lanes and stay behind other vehicles and change speed and so on. This is not self-driving. This is partial automation. However, there are people who switch this partial automation on and then move to the back seat, right? This is a recipe for disaster, and this is how disasters, this is how accidents happen. This is how people die. We've had, you know, situations with people dying by simply, you know, assuming that a car can fully drive itself. This is the same with any other type of algorithm. Basically, what's driving those vehicles are algorithms as well. You know, maybe not little Kevins, but also this type of digital minions. And so let's imagine you're a federal government and you want to develop an algorithm that checks whether people have made their payments or, you know, have received the right amounts of money. Go ahead, do it. Absolutely. Let this algorithm even, you know, write letters. But before you send them, have somebody have a look through those letters, make sure that, you know, everything's happening the way it's intended to be happening.
Yes, and I think the Centrelink robo-debt fiasco taught us that very, very powerfully here in Australia. The level of human damage that was caused by that was extreme. Mm. So when something does go wrong with an algorithm, Marek, who's responsible? If a self-driving taxi causes an accident, who gets arrested?
This is a wonderful question, Hilary, and many of us in the academia, but also in public sector, we're trying to unpack it at the moment. There are various levels of responsibility. Some responsibility lies in the creators of the algorithms. Some of the responsibility lies in those who put those algorithms in specific, you know, tools, devices, robots, and applications. And some responsibility might be lying in the users of the algorithm, right? So that delineation is not easy, but what is the most important in this, it's pretty much never that the algorithm is to be blamed, right? So I start the book with a story about a group of students in the UK protesting against the algorithm and then unpacking it and showing that it's really not the algorithm's fault. It's typically, you know, a human who had an idea to create an algorithm and didn't realize that there might be some unintended consequences.
I love, too, that you write that the capabilities, speed and reach of algorithms define it, but people are critical to its success and also, it sounds like, to its failure. What does that mean, though, for the jobs of the future? Might we still see some reduction in the need for actual human workers, even if we need this level of oversight?
Since the age of industrial revolution, any technological progress has been reshaping our workforce and what we do, and so in many ways this is not changing here. There will be tasks, not necessarily jobs, but tasks within jobs that will become redundant, that will be automated. This means that all of us have to think about our lives and our future as something that's constantly changing, and we need to be ready and open to reimagining ourselves. And in the book, I am writing about people who massively benefit from what I call the economy of algorithms. I call those people digital minion masters, those who command small armies of algorithms, who do not have to work for anyone anymore, but they have those digital minions working for them.
Marek, a weird thing that you've been noticing recently, people assigning female gender to algorithms and robots lately. What is going on there?
It's concerning. Let's put it this way, for a number of reasons, right? The first one is the gender assignment, which might be suggesting some inherent bias in how we think about our human roles in the society. And frankly, I don't think I want to go there, Hillary, you know, in this discussion. But you know, it is concerning. The other aspect, and look, I was guilty of it in the past as well, is what we call anthropomorphization of algorithms. The fact that we, you know, attach human features to them, and that could be problematic when we talk about algorithms, you know, lying or hallucinating or, you know, or being very, very smart or intelligent. Those terms are misleading because they make us think that those algorithms have those sort of generic properties of a human, where in most cases, those are just sets of instructions, sometimes very complex, like we discussed, that are just really, really extremely good at just one task, right? You know, my tax return filing algorithm is really good at this, but it's absolutely clueless when it comes to cooking or, you know, or going for a run with me, right? So we need to understand it.
That seems to be the key. It's been fascinating exploring a little bit of it with you today, Marek. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's been really fascinating. Professor Marek Kowalkiewicz describes himself as an optimist within reason. He's the chair in digital economy at QUT. His book's called The Economy of Algorithms, AI and the Rise of the Digital Minions.
Getting in touch with ABCRN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.